Welcome to Comadres y Comics.
Comadres y Comics is a podcast hosted by three Latina women.
We focus on the Latinx presence in the comic industry,
with a special focus on strong female characters and creators.
Hi guys, welcome to a new episode, episode 23. We are your hosts. I'm Sarah.
I'm Kristen.
And I'm Jen.
How are you guys doing?
I'm doing awesome. I'm off of a great Halloween celebration. For those of you who don't know, this is Kristen. My wedding anniversary is on Halloween.
Yeah, very apt.
My husband and I celebrated 10 years this year, and we went to Disneyland and had an awesome time.
That is so cool.
Yes.
Oh my gosh.
I'm just off of a Halloween
vibe,
high, whatever. Cause like Halloween is my shit. It's my time. It's my time to shine. Like your goth girl's gonna shine supreme.
Nice. What did you end up doing?
I took my siblings out trick or treating.
Oh.
It's usually what I do every year, but you know, just.
She was dressed amazingly though on Halloween.
I was.
She was in total goth regalia.
nice.
It was awesome.
It was great. And I was supposed to be a witch, but one of our coworkers said, they were like, "Oh, you're supposed to be Death from Sandman, right?"
Oh,
and when he
nice.
Said that, I was just like, "Fuck, you know what? You're right. That's who I am. That's it. That is it. You, oh my god, I can't believe you beat me."
Yes, that's awesome.
That's because
Fatality.
I have her necklace.
Oh, yeah. I remember when that came in and she was like,
"Oh, wow.
I have to have it.
I have to have it." We're going to get some more in, by the way.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
You know what? Speaking of Sandman, I was thinking of doing like a photo shoot, but doing Despair. Like an all naked, like hook ring with the, cause you know how my sides are shaved and I'm slightly overweight. So I think it would go well, like a Despair thing.
That'd I'm not that cool. far in the book, but it sounds cool.
Very cool.
Well, she's kind of a short, overweight, stubby Despair. You know, she has these like, kind of like, underbite.
Okay.
And then she has like her hair like, pebbles, you know, where she has and so, and then her sigil is a ring, but it has a hook on it. So she's like, sometimes she just scratches her cheek.
Are you
she's
serious?
Despair. Yeah.
I've only read the first three trades. Every week on Tuesdays when we get the books at the shop, I say, okay, this week I'm not taking any singles. I'm just going to catch up on everything I have at home and just resign myself to reading trades. And like that, like Sandman, I could go and just read Sandman and finish Sandman. But I just have this horrible case of FOMO with the new issues, and my reading pile is just so big and I'm just so behind. But when people talk about Sandman, I'm like, I haven't finished reading it.
Aww.
I feel such shame.
You should.
I can't. Look, when you get to volume 6, that volume 6 is my favorite volume.
Which book is it?
Fables and Reflections.
Oh, that's
That's like, I cannot stop gushing about that. That volume in specific is the one that has me shook every single time.
Well, the whole series is amazing. I love it. Love it.
But anyways, after that, I was basically on a high. Like, I was just like, yeah, man, fuck that shit. I'm Death from Sandman. Yeah, that's it. That's my outfit. Anyways, but yeah.
That's cool. I'm so glad. I feel like I kind of missed Halloween only because we only had like about 15 kids that came, and they all came at once. And after that, nobody came. Yeah, and I was ready. I had my cloak on. I had my mask on.
I saw your
And
dress.
I was like, I'm going to scare them this year. I was so high. I was like, I'm going to do it. And that was it. And you know, the thing that happened.
You were high on the idea of scaring them?
Yes, okay. I was. Yeah.
I just clarified.
Well, there was that Dodger game, and I thought, well, there's going to be a little less. So I didn't buy that much candy. Yeah. And then I was really excited. I had a beer, and I was like, it's going to happen this year. I'm going to be, like, super Halloween-y. And then I had to go to the restroom. And then when I was coming out, the kids were already at the door. So I didn't get a chance to put my cloak on or my mask on.
Oh my god, that's so funny.
So I didn't even get to wear it. It was so sad. I'm like, oh my god, why? And after that, nothing happened. I was sitting there watching, Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Yeah.
And I was wearing my cloak. and the mask was over my head, and still nobody came. Nobody.
Aww. Yeah.
Sad. But aww. Yeah, and then I just went to sleep.
Aww.
Sad.
At the end of it, I basically ended up at home playing video games. So Overwatch, the Halloween Terror Night things was wrapping up, so your girl was grinding.
Oh.
I wanted a Symmetra skin, which was a dragon skin. Like, she looked like a dragon, and she also looked hot, so I was just like, fuck. I discovered something about myself that day.
That's awesome. That is so cool. So let's get right into the episode, guys.
Yes.
So this week on Chisme de la Semana, this is Sarah, and I have some chisme. It's Netflix has revealed a brand new trailer for Marvel's Punisher, which finally confirms the series' secretive premiere date. And the premiere date is, guys, it's November 17th.
Yep, coming right up.
Now, dude.
So close.
The same day that Warner Brothers releases Justice League in theaters.
Oh! Oh my. Holy day. Oh, shit. That is. Oh, my God.
Yep, that's right.
That is the biggest. Oh, my God.
Mm-hmm.
Marvel did that.
So,
they
well,
did that.
I know that Marvel probably did not originally plan that. I mean, because I've read multiple stories that came out over the couple of weeks after that mass shooting in Vegas,
mm-hmm.
that Marvel postponed the original release date because of the mm-hmm. fact that there were so many people who were making, they were basically trying to say that, the Vegas shooter, they're making a lot of comparisons to a Frank Castle character. And so mm-hmm. I think, and there were even a lot of, there were some people who were like, Marvel, Netflix, you've got to cancel this shit. This mm-hmm. is like too soon, too much. And instead, they just postponed it.
Yeah. And which, like, I mean, like...
Well, now it doesn't sound as juicy as I thought.
Yeah.
Darn it.
But even then, we still didn't know the release date
yeah.
for it. So
yeah.
it is juicy news. And also, drama.
Yeah, that's
oh,
some
yeah.
drama.
That
is some cheesing right there.
Because legit, I was thinking of going to go see Justice League, but I would rather watch Punisher.
That
I
is
would
true.
Also rather watch Punisher,
me
but
too.
I definitely will be there getting my Aquaman fix.
Ooh.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah.
Aquaman himself would
you know?
Make a grand case. Like, if they put out an ad right now, just with Jason Momoa and his Aquaman regalia
yeah.
saying, come watch my movie. I'd be like, oh, honey,
I'm there.
That's it.
Oh, man.
That's all you needed to say.
You know, I don't know why they had not thought of that as an awesome marketing ploy, because I think that that would be 100% successful.
Make it like the Old Spice commercial.
Oh, wow. Wow.
Jason Momoa there, some guy shittily dressed as like a like what could be seen as a Punisher character, and Jason Momoa going like, you see that man? You see your man? Now look at me.
Game over.
That's it. I was to buy Frank Castle.
In the commercial, because you know in the Old Spice commercial, he's riding a horse. In this commercial, he could even be riding some cheesy seahorse.
Oh my fucking god. It could be an inflatable seahorse.
Yeah.
Oh man. I think it would actually increase the sexy factor. I think so.
Oh my gosh.
Shit. You heard it here first, DC. This is your marketing strategy. Do it. Or else I'm gonna see Punisher instead of Justice League.
Exactly. Well, Netflix is really killing it. I mean, Stranger Things, season two just came out.
Yes.
So I'm very excited about that.
I haven't finished it.
I haven't started.
I haven't started either.
I've been super busy.
And like, oh my god. It's just, cause there was this one, gif people posted on Tumblr before Tumblr blocked everything so that I wouldn't find, okay. so that I wouldn't find, like, I wouldn't get spoiled, but there was this cute little gif of Eleven in her Halloween outfit.
Oh.
She's saying, Halloween. And the sheriff is saying, it sure is. And it's so cute. I was just like, fuck, I can't wait till I get to this episode.
Nice, nice. Mm-hmm. And that was this chisme de la semana. All right, girls, it's that time again. You know what time it is?
What time is it?
It's time for beer.
Nice.
So, I just recently got back from Europe. I went to London, Paris, and Belgium, and then took a little trip to Bruges. And I went into this little chocolatier shop, and the only reason I went in there wasn't because of the chocolate. I just saw it said, beer inside. And I was like, ooh, chocolate and beer.
Interesting.
So, this place is called the Chocolate Kiss, and they're... I know, it sounds a little bit dirty. the beer is also called the Chocolate Kiss, and it's 11%.
Oh, my gosh.
There's not much information on this beer itself, except to say that some people describe it as a Belgian strong ale, and others describe it as a Belgian quad, which I'm very excited about.
I love both of those things.
Yeah, me too.
Belgians are my favorite. I love quads. I love the ales. I'm not a fan of chocolate. So
I know, right?
See what happens.
You know, my husband is not a fan of chocolate, and we went inside
like
this
chocolate itself.
Yeah, itself. Just not really a chocolate person.
Oh, you just I know, made me right? die a little bit.
Right? and I am not a chocolate person either. Yeah. You know, I mean, it's every like year or something.
Yeah.
So we walked into this place for the beer, and then they had free samples. We had their artisan chocolate that they make there. My God, it blew my mind.
Yes, I mean, okay, the chocolate that I do like is dark chocolate.
Dark chocolate.
So, milk chocolate, I'm not a fan of at all. Chocolate cake, any kinds of those types of things, I'm not a fan. But Belgian chocolate, I've had some Belgian chocolates that are so good.
Delicious.
Very, very good. So, I mean, and eating them right there from actually in Belgium and eating it fresh probably however it is that chocolatiers make their chocolate, I bet you made it even more delicious.
It was, oh my God, undescribable actually.
Yeah.
I mean, my husband and I just kind of looked at each other like, wow, we just kind of went to heaven for like a second. So there's some little writing. It's, even the label is kind of so kind of like, you know, you did it in your garage because
describe the bottle. Please describe how the bottle is shaped.
So the bottle
has a chocolate kiss,
and it has a strange similarity to a butt plug. but that, I'm not going to let that discourage us from tasting it. And also, there was a little bit of writing at the bottom of the label, and I tried to Google Translate.
Yeah.
And it said dark Belgian beer with gingerbread on bottle beers. Then the rest, it got really weird.
I love gingerbread.
Oh, this says, and there is an English on the bottom that says dark Belgian beer with re-fermentation.
Yes, but it made no reference to the gingerbread part on the first line, which I thought was really interesting.
Yeah.
And then I went on.
And what's re-fermentation?
Yeah, I have no idea.
Interesting.
I think they confused some translations.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Okay.
So that tends to happen.
Yeah.
I tried to get some information from the lady who was helping us at the chocolate place, and she said that they're the only ones that brew the chocolate beer, which I thought was interesting, and they said they do that themselves, and they use a local microbrewery to make it. So it's really interesting.
And if you're interested
super
in finding out more information, or you're making your own trip to Belgium, and you want to visit the Chocolate Kiss, they do have a website, and it's www.thechocolatekiss.be.
Exactly. And it's called, the shop is called The Chocolate Kiss. And I thought it was really interesting because they actually have chocolates that look like gears and sprockets and nuts and bolts, and they actually look like they have rust on them, but it's really real chocolate.
Oh, wow.
And oh. I would have loved to have brought chocolate from there, but yeah. a little tiny bag was like $20. Okay. So I'm like, I'm just bringing the beer. So, okay, well, guys.
How much was the beer?
I want to live in a world where the beer is cheaper than chocolate.
and it was, actually. The bottle itself, I think it was like $6 or $7.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So I bought one for my brother who is a connoisseur of beers. He has sponsored our beer tasting here on this segment and one for us. So if you will do the honors, Kristen.
Okey-dokey.
I'm so excited. I've been like, I hope they want to record this week because I want to taste it.
And I think it's worth noting that I am opening the beer bottle with a bottle opener that is from Camoronazo.
Camaronazo?
There you go. Camaronazo. Camaronazo
yeah. is a concoction with, it has like, shrimp tasting, tomato juice
yes,
tasting.
Yes, it says tomato and shrimp cocktail.
And yeah,
Camaronazo.
And it can be used to
so
make,
it's like
a yes,
like
but,
a Bloody Mary?
Yeah, mix? Bloody Mary mix kind okay. of, yeah. Alright, so.
Okay, it smells. It definitely smells like a Belgian beer. Okay. And I think it just that alone made my mouth start to water.
I love mouth watering. I love mouth watering.
And it
Kristen.
Is not at all the color that I thought it was going to be because of the whole chocolate thing.
That's exactly what I read on a review that they thought it was going to be darker.
Yes.
Yeah.
I thought it would be darker. So it's kind of like an amber.
Yes, it is a golden amber. Thank you.
Are we doing that one more for?
Oh, I just wanted a little.
Yeah, there you go. Okay, so I don't actually smell chocolate. Maybe you guys do.
Hold up.
But I smell. Whoo! The Belgian smell of this beer is so strong, and it is. It's making my mouth water.
I don't smell any chocolate.
No, I don't smell chocolate.
You don't smell chocolate.
I don't smell maybe a hint of ginger.
I think I can smell that.
Maybe a little hint of ginger that I smell.
I'm gonna go with you on that because that's ginger.
So I don't taste chocolate either, which actually makes it like maybe it wasn't actually a chocolate beer. It was just the Chocolate Kiss was the name of the shop.
Well, I'm disappointed. What the heck? I was promised chocolate beer.
I like it.
No, I mean, it's delicious.
Oh, did she tell you it was chocolate beer?
Well, I read that it was one of the only chocolate beers in Bourges. The only chocolate beer in Bourges.
Well, you had the one with experience of Belgian chocolate. Does it taste like the Belgian chocolate you tasted?
No. Not at all.
I like it, honestly.
No, it's good. It's good.
And the fact that it doesn't taste like chocolate is probably a plus for me because, again, I'm not. And I was like, what am I going to taste right now with this crazy chocolate beer?
I'm not
going
to lie. I wanted to taste dark chocolate.
Me too. I really did. I mean, it was false advertising. I mean, it's good. It is good.
Okay, it tastes good.
Yes, but I don't taste chocolate.
I don't taste chocolate at all. No. Maybe taste a little bit of ginger.
I maybe taste a little ginger, yeah.
Yeah, disappointed.
I like it, but I'm wondering what I really would have thought if it really did taste like chocolate. I don't think I would have liked it.
Well, I traveled with this for so long.
Okay, so
I think if I would have bought it in the store, it wouldn't hurt as much, you know?
Drink a little more of that sticky monkey.
Yeah, so
I already had all of it.
So this beer has traveled all the way from Belgium with Sarah to our podcast, and she was so excited, and the look on her face right now is a pure sadness.
Yeah, I mean, it's good because yeah. I mean, all I did was drink in Bruges and in Brussels. So, I mean, I have been drinking a lot, and this is really good.
Yeah, there's definitely a ginger aftertaste. Yeah. I can taste it.
I'm not a fan of ginger, actually.
But I wish that it had more of like a chocolate undertone. I really do.
I taste cacao or like kind of dark chocolate.
Even like a bitter.
Even a bitter chocolate would have been, you know, but there is nothing.
No.
Like, what the hell?
Hey, at least it's carbonated.
So on the.
I'm like.
Yeah.
Very true. That has to be a plus.
Tell us about your. Brief trip to London.
So London, man, oh my god, we had to resort actually towards the end of the London trip to drink Heineken and Heineken and Stella Artois, because the beer there was so horrible, and we had beer on tap, and we said,
yeah, it's
give
different.
Me something local.
It's different, yeah.
A
local favorite.
Yeah, exactly.
And except we forget that they have shit taste. Oh, yes,
it was not cool at all.
Disclaimer, Commodity Comics Podcast does not hold the same, what do you call it, thoughts and ideals as those voiced by Jennifer. They are solely her own.
Yeah, they're just mine.
No, but seriously, it was really bad. It was really bad. Like I said, we resorted to drinking Heineken and Stella Artois.
I mean,
Stella Artois ain't that bad.
No. I mean, but you're in Europe.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, you want to drink the local beer that you think is going to be great.
It is definitely a specific type of beer, and there are some that are very tasty. I mean, if you don't like a lot of carbonation, I mean, drinking American beer, it's like, that's all you get, really. At the front end of that beer, unless it's been sitting for a while, you just are, it's full of carbonation.
Mm-hmm. We like our sodas.
English beer is more flat, and generally it's supposed to be more, drank more warm. And there is a new brewery in Torrance called Yorkshire Brewery, which is English-style beers, ales. And actually, they're all hand-pumped because they're pumped without carbonation. And so the way that they come out of the cask or whatever that they're in is just the air motion of them pumping it. It's not actually like on a tap. You open the tap and the carbonation from the keg is what pushes the beer out and goes into your glass. But with these beers, it's the pump, and they literally pump it a couple times to bring it out, and then it goes into your glass. And there's some carbonation, but carbonation as if you had poured a beer and then left it sitting there and maybe came back to drink it an hour later.
Like a flat Coke.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they were definitely bland.
Yeah. Okay, and also I was going to say, English beers are lower alcohol content. And the reason being is because they are, they love beer. They're heavy, heavy drinkers. Beer, every chance they get, and they are day-long drinkers. You can't take an IPA and drink it all day. You'll be drunk the second one that you drink. Mm-hmm. And so that's what an English style ale is, that they want to enjoy their beer all day. And they're not after that American buzz. American buzz. They want to enjoy the beer over a long period of time.
Yeah,
so
but
it's a cultural thing.
But I don't think that's any excuse for not having any taste to it.
Yeah, that's no excuse for no flavor.
And actually,
the same thing could be said for their food.
I'm sorry.
Wow, shots fired.
It just comes out. I'm sorry.
It probably had taste, but just, I mean, considering the fact that you're an IPA girl, I could understand.
And that was a good point that you brought that up. I mean, I didn't do any research on this, but when I went there and I said, there were a couple of bars I went to and I said, pubs. Can you tell me which one of your beers is with the highest content? Because I wanted a bang for my buck.
Yeah.
Because we were only drinking one beer at the establishment. Yeah. We weren't drinking, you know, and they're like, oh, that's so funny. You know, most people come and ask me which one's the lowest content.
Yeah.
And I didn't understand that until you just said that.
Yeah.
But yeah, having said that, it was not cool.
And then they went into the back and made some, like, drunk American joke.
Oh, probably. I wouldn't be surprised. But yes, but on the flip side, when we got to Belgium, it was amazing. We went into anywhere. We actually got to our Airbnb early. So we were walking the streets, and then there was this one lady who had her shop open, I don't know what they're calling, pubs or whatever. And it was nearing, I think it was 9:30. And we said, do you serve beer right now? And she said, yes, you, I don't open till 10, but she's like, obviously there's somebody else open. You can have a seat and I'll pour you some beers. Uh-huh. And we actually got, buy two, get one free. Oh. And, we got the special and it was like, you know, something I've never heard of. My God, that was magnificent. Yeah. And it was like one for free. I mean, what? Like, this was my town. Like, instantly I was like, and off that 1.5, I was already buzzing really good. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So then after that, we just went for a walk, and then we went to Delirium Cafe.
Oh.
Oh my God. If you guys are not,
I love Delirium.
Yeah. If you guys are not familiar, it's the one with the pink elephant.
Yeah.
And, the way they serve it, they have, this cafe has like, I don't know, around 200 taps, going on at once. So they serve it in the glass and then it's overflowing, you know, the head is overflowing. Yeah. Then they set it down and they cut it with a knife, the head. Ooh. And then because the glasses has been, you know, like some of the head has flown over the glass, then they dip it in water. And then they serve it to you.
Interesting.
It's really cool. I have video. I will post it.
Oh, cool. Okay.
But I thought that was super amazing.
Did you ask them why? Like what the point of it was? Like was it for, did it enhance taste or? It was just cool to look at.
I just think it was the way they serve it that way because, you know, like, mostly it was people from out of town that were in there.
So, yeah, so you're kind like, of like a touristy thing.
Yeah, it was a touristy thing. Like, oh my, you know, I know my glass is sticky and the way to get rid of it was to dump it in water. And because, it looks really cool the way they serve it with a lot of head and then cut the head.
Yeah.
I thought that was cool because it shows how thick the head was. Yeah. And it's, cause some heads are like really thin and airy, and this one was really thick and is awesome.
I'm not gonna lie, every time you just say described head,
my boy, you just described my college dating experience.
I was gonna say, that's pretty much what I was gonna say.
But it was magnificent. I should have done what I originally thought, which was to grab some, I had some Delirium Red. I don't know if they carry it here, but it was magnificent. It was a strong cherry flavored beer. Ooh. And it was a real pungent. It was amazing.
That sounds awesome. There is, I think I mentioned to it you guys before, there's a place in Torrance called the, Torrance Beer Cellar, that has beers from all over, the country as well as all over the world. And I know they have Delirium there because I've seen the elephant, but I don't know if they have like the multiple types of different beers. I'll have to check it out next time I go because that sounds really good.
So, it was delicious. They, we tried only the Deliriums on tap. We didn't stray from those choices. So we had the original Delirium. We had, Delirium Red, Delirium Nocturne, and Delirium Argentine.
Ooh.
So that was interesting. But
Argentine?
Mm-hmm. Argiente or Argentine, something like that. And they were delicious.
Cool.
But by far the one that caught my eye the most was the red.
Yeah.
The color was amazing and the taste was equally.
I'll have to keep an eye out for that. That sounds good.
Delirium Red, guys. But yes, so I guess we should rate this one.
So I actually, I'm going to have to give it two different ratings. I'm going to give it a partial for the actual taste of what this beer was. It's a really nice Belgian. It has full flavor. It goes down smoothly. It like I was saying in the beginning, the smell of it like made my mouth start to water from the beginning. But I'm gonna give it an initial for the fact that it is not chocolate. There was no chocolate, and we were promised chocolate.
Yeah.
I gotta agree with you. I mean, even though, like, it was, like, painstakingly, it was painstaking because I didn't want it to break. I had to wrap it and rewrap it and put it in the luggage. And, you know, it was just, like, it was kind of, I took that extra step, you know, that extra initiative, and yet it didn't deliver. So I'm gonna go initial on this one.
I'm gonna have to agree with you that, actually, I'm gonna go with Kristen in that I didn't like the taste of it. It was very good. I don't think, have we had Belgians here before?
I don't know.
I think this might be the first Belgian I've ever had. Mm-hmm. And I like it. It's a good beer. It's a good chilling beer. But I really want chocolate.
Yeah.
So on itself, if they hadn't sold it as a chocolate beer,
yeah,
I would have given it a partial. But I ain't getting no chocolate, so it's an initial.
I completely I agree with you. I had high hopes. Like I thought, if it comes from the chocolatier where I had those samples of the chocolate that just made me go to heaven for like a few seconds while it melted in my mouth, then I think this is going to be like amazing. And I brought one for my brother. Now I'm kind of embarrassed. I'm embarrassed about the gift I brought.
No, it tastes good, but just don't lead with chocolate.
Right, yeah. Right, exactly. But it's called a chocolate kiss. I mean, seriously.
And maybe because it looks like a book club.
But I feel like the chocolate kiss is just on there as the name of the store you bought it from.
I suppose so. But
name your beer properly, people.
Yeah, don't mislead us. We call it
the Gingerbread House or something.
Yeah, that would have worked, you know. There were other beers that I had, because what we ended up doing is our drinking was done. We went to the liquor stores and the local markets. We would grab a baguette.
They have
then
liquor stores?
One, kind of like
Like a bodega, yeah.
Oh, okay.
And then we would buy our beers there. We would get like those nice tall cans, like the ones we get from Monkish, and they were like $1, $1.50.
Wow.
And even that beer, oh my God, way better than this
one. Imagine what our dollar beer here is like. I mean, you know what what we all went to high school. We know what our dollar beer is. Yeah.
We've all had the Colt and the what was that other one? The blue one. What is it called? The
all I remember is I'm a Four
Loko. Oh, gosh, yeah.
No. And then I don't remember anything.
Colt and also, what's the malt beers? The,
Mickey's?
No, not Mickey's.
I know what you're talking about.
Oh, shoot, what is it?
Malt liquor. Oh, my God. Bless you, malt liquor.
Dude, I decked a guy
on
malt liquor.
I used to drink it with a straw. To get the best
Jesus. What? But, you know, you deserve it.
Oh, Old E. Yeah.
Oh, my God.
If we're
talking about embarrassing things we used to do with beer, I used to pour mine in, like, a wine glass.
Because you're fancy.
I was like 15.
Leading to that, I also would pour Boone's in a wine glass. Okay. I'll see your wine glass and I'll raise it. Wow. We've come a long way, girls.
I just drank Cisco right out of the bottle.
Oh, man. We've come a long way, girls.
Yes,
I think
we have.
I'm sorry, did you do your rating, Jen?
Yeah, I did.
Oh, excellent, excellent. So, all right, guys, well, sad, disappointing. Sorry about that. All right, guys. So, what are we reading today, Kristen?
So, speaking of high hopes, today we are reviewing The Twilight Children, and actually, that song was very apt for this book. Twilight Children, that very
magical realism, fantasy.
So this book, the reason why we chose it is written by Gilbert Hernandez. Where have we heard that name before?
Oh, I wonder who could it possibly be tied to?
So, Gilbert Hernandez is obviously one of the famous Hernandez brothers of Love and Rockets fame. Mm-hmm. And when Jen brought this, I had actually read this book in singles, but it didn't really even dawn on me that that's who that was. And when Jen's like, we already did Jaime, let's do Gilbert. And when she was like, that's Twilight Children, I'm like, oh, I had no idea. So that was kind of cool. I was so excited. I had read some of these in single issues, and I was excited to, I think I read the first two. I want to say maybe, I do remember reading the end, but I think I just picked it up at one point because I wanted to see how it ended. Mm-hmm. But the description of this book on the back of it is makes the story sound so freaking amazing. So on the book it says, "See the light. No one knows what the mysterious glowing spheres are or where they come from. The only thing that matters to the residents of the beachside village where the orbs manifest is what they do when they appear. They blind children and imbue them with psychic abilities. They destroy homes and make entire families disappear. They attract scientists, government experts, and secret agents, each with their own agenda, and they inflame small-town passions, secret lovers, simmering resentments to a fever pitch. Now they've brought Ella, materializing on the beach just as mysteriously as one of the orbs. This beautiful woman says nothing, but seems to harbor unspeakable power. Will she help to save the town or destroy it? Or is it Ella herself who is really in danger?"
Dun, dun, dun.
Now, reading,
so dramatic.
Reading that description, I'm like, holy hell, this book is like, I'm all about it, and I can't wait to read it. Now, it is worth mentioning that this book is illustrated by Darwin Cook.
The late Darwin Cook.
Mm-hmm. And as soon as you open it up and you see the artwork, you would, if you're a fan at all of his, you definitely can recognize his artwork right off the bat. Mm-hmm. And it is a beautifully drawn book. I'm not sure, does he do the coloring as well?
No, the Dave Stewart.
Okay,
the
Dave
color.
Stewart, yeah. Now, you know, you might know Dave Stewart as the colorist from Sandman Overture.
Mm-hmm. And I really did like his colors.
Yeah.
His colors were very, very nice.
So, I love the colors in the book as well. The art is great. I love Darwin Cook's style of art. It's super, it's very unique in that, like I said, you can tell it's his art when you see it, just like you can tell it's Jaime Hernandez's art when you see it. And there's a couple of artists that when you see, you know who you're looking at.
Yeah.
So I love the color. I feel like the coloring and the art is really really goes along with what I think the story tried to portray.
Mm-hmm.
But I will go ahead and leave it there and get your guys' take on what you thought of this book.
Well, go ahead, Sarah.
Yoni, take it away. I was really excited because it's a Vertigo title, Vertigo,
yes.
DC title, yeah. And I love my Vertigo. Vertigo is like my first love, but better.
we were just praising Sandman.
Right,
yes,
exactly.
Yes.
Thank you. The art, like you said, is breathtaking. It really is. I love the straight lines. I love the big eyes. The coloring is also very unique. The story, it was difficult to follow at points.
Mm-hmm.
And I really tried hard, and I actually reread some pages because I wasn't feeling like I knew what was going on. I was really misled by Ella. I was misled by the orb. I did not like Tito. Tito is one of the characters. She happens to be a very attractive woman who has a husband and is having an affair with another man and is in constant pursuit of any other guy.
Yeah, whoever she's with. She's always looking at someone else.
And she's always like, I always get what I want.
Yes.
And I'm just like, I don't like you, Tito. I don't even know why anyone's your friend. You're so mean.
And I was wondering, is her behavior caused by the orb?
I mean, it says it's inflamed passion.
Right, yeah.
And but I can see that she's passionate.
But she had the husband lover situation before the orbs, right?
Mm-hmm. And not only
but
that,
but they were saying that they've come multiple times.
But I never found a link between that.
Honestly,
and who she ended up with at the end
exactly.
was like, I don't get it
exactly. Uh-huh. Honestly,
and not only that, what was up with her husband? Like there was that one panel where he was just like, when he was talking to an orb, he was just like, I'm not coming back.
I found a wife.
I found love, and I was just like,
Where did that come from?
Yeah, I was just like, dude, are you an alien? What the hell is going on?
Yeah.
Why did the CIA agent burn?
First of all, we didn't know that these people were aliens or that the orbs were aliens until Jen did some research on the internet.
Yeah, I had to look up an interview.
That's where, I mean, I
but
guess
yeah. The orbs are
aliens. I guess we were supposed to infer that they were because, like, the secret G-men were coming to do investigations and the scientists were there. But honestly, I didn't get it. And I didn't get that Ella was also an alien, and that, but she's a different kind of alien than the orbs, and that Ella is, I mean, she mentions that I'm here to save you, but your fact that you said that there was no link between, between Tito and
the
erratic behavior and the orbs, honestly, there were no links anywhere in the story.
Yeah, yeah. It feels, it almost feels like Batman versus Superman. In the fact that maybe there was too much cut in the editing and then the tides.
Okay, we had this conversation.
Shit, yeah.
Just as soon as she finished, because she was reading it on the stuff.
I believe what they said in the interview is that they were trying out a new style of writing.
It was
a bit of an experiment and a bit of a challenge as well.
If they wanted to challenge the reader, they sure did. I failed the test.
So apparently in this article that she read was an interview that both Darwin and Hilbert were trying to give themselves challenges by picking Hilbert being the writer picking an artist and Darwin Cook being the artist picking a writer that were the most completely polar opposite from themselves and then trying to come together and create a project. Yeah. And that's where Twilight Children came from.
Wow.
And it's not a half bad idea. There's a lot of little
ideas. I mean, this little synopsis in the back of the book sounds amazing. I think that the storyline that we're in, how many issues were in here?
It's four.
Only four issues.
Yeah.
I think we could have drawn this out. There's a lot of potential.
Yeah. Those four issues could have easily been turned into four volumes.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
There's like four entire story arcs in there.
Yeah.
A lot more if you get into like what could have this been, what this could have been. So there's a lot of ideas, but like in the interview itself, it said that while they were doing it, they had already finished up the four issues, and then Darwin Cook passed away. And so there's that whole scenario,
so were they planning on doing more?
They said that they were thinking about doing a side series. Maybe investigating everything.
Okay.
But Darwin, the interview I was reading, Darwin Cook was still alive.
Gotcha.
So I'm guessing him passing away all those ideas are gone. Because it's very much a joint collaboration between Hilbert, Darwin Cook, and Dave Stewart.
Yeah.
Because Dave Stewart is credited as helping with the script
of
it. Maybe he shouldn't have helped as much. But but it's it definitely has a lot of potential. And now we're going into me. This is Jen, by the way. The artwork is amazing.
Yes.
It's Darwin Cook art. Yes. It's amazing.
Yes.
And the dialogue. And let's be real here. A lot of the artwork in the situation wouldn't be there without a script. Mm-hmm. Someone saying, like, this is how everything should be positioned and how it's going. And, everything looks great and is positioned great. And those ideas, they're there.
Yeah.
But there's not enough issues. And I guess there wasn't enough time. It actually came out pretty regularly.
Yeah.
Which is amazing considering that it's some, not that it's a Vertigo, but that it's from what could have kind of be seen as an indie publisher. But it was a bit disappointing.
I think, Jen, nailed it right on the head when she said the writing was just so simple.
Mm-hmm.
It was so simple, and to me, I felt like there were so many unfinished ideas.
Mm-hmm.
Even just within one little panel and one word bubble, it just seemed like the thought began, but it never went anywhere.
Mm-hmm. And that's one of the reasons I reread the pages, because I'm like, did I read that wrong?
Yeah.
Like, because I don't get that feeling. I'm like, I don't see the transition flow.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And it's funny because I told Jen, oh, Sarah always tries to be so positive. Let's see what positive things she finds about this.
You know what? And I was thinking the very same thing when I finished reading it, because I just finished it today.
Yeah.
Because like I said, I reread some pages, and I wanted to savor the end, because I thought maybe if I reread it, I will get somewhere. Uh-huh. And when I finished it, I'm like, wow, I think this is it. And I guess the audience will get to see that I'm not always just positive about everything. And not everything's going to get the hope another day now.
And I mean, like, the first issue is strong.
Yeah.
The first issue is very strong.
I remember reading the first issue and being super excited about it. And I was like, oh, I love this. And the art is so amazing. And it was like a little sense of, like mystery and like weird, like, sci-fi, also like fantasy, this fantasy type stuff, and also the whole
thing with Tito. Yes, and the whole novella,
like kind of aspect with the lover and the husband and all that kind of stuff. And so I was really excited about moving forward after the first issue. But then reading it here in the trade, it never went anywhere.
I gotta say, like you said, that you always bring, I always look at the positive. The only thing I really enjoyed about the book was, as far as story is concerned, is Bundo's story. Like, if you take everything else out, and you just focus on Bundo as the main character.
That was such a sad story.
And just snip out Bundo's experience throughout the story, because they give us to us in clips.
Yeah.
And you just put that together, that's a good story.
Yeah.
Even the ending was a good one. Even though it left you kind of like...
That was super sad.
Yeah. Yeah, it really was.
What Bundo's story in here is he's a loner that lives on the beach, and he's, I think, one of the first people that sees the orb when it comes out into the ocean. Mm-hmm. But the kids that are out on the beach are kind of relaying their story to the reader as they're like playing on the beach and like talking about Bundo, that he is just a drunk that lives on the beach, and the reason why he lives on the beach is that at some point in his life he had a wife and children, and he got so drunk that he fell asleep on the couch with a lit cigarette and it burned their house down.
And it killed everyone except him.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they're wondering how come he's not in jail.
Yeah, and they said he did go to jail, but that it was determined it was an accident, so they let him out.
Right, exactly.
And then we later find out what really happened. In the story, that it was kind of the fault of the orbs, and which made it a bit sadder because it wasn't even him.
Right. Yeah.
And he couldn't remember because the orbs take memory or something like that.
But see, that's the thing. They don't really tell you what the orbs can do. I mean, you kind of think that they take away your memories and some sight.
Yeah, because a whole bunch of people throughout the whole book were like, I don't remember. I don't remember.
And I'm just like,
what? It seems like Ella could do this too, that she had some powers that were similar to the orbs.
Yeah.
So she might have not even been a different alien species. Mm. She might have been from the same one.
Yeah.
Because she did manifest from an orb. Right. I think.
What makes me mad is she hardly said anything. Yeah. Like, I think that she...
I get that they're going for the mysterious, beautiful woman thing.
Yeah. I guess.
Come on.
But then there are points where, like, the whole town is standing around, like, kind of zombified. And I'm like, what is that about?
I know, me too. I was like, why aren't they talking? They don't tell us anything.
And then they don't get emotional about it. Like, then they're like, oh yeah, remember when we were like, we all woke up in the middle of the street?
Yeah.
The next day. It's like, hello, don't you want to leave this town? Yeah. Don't you want to find out what's going on with you?
And you can see that Tito kind of wants to.
I think Tito's the only one, and clarify, Tito is a female. And she's the only one that's, like, really emotional.
Yeah.
But even so, she's emotional about, like, the wrong things. She wants the guy that doesn't want her. Mm-hmm. She confronts Ella. Like, maybe focus on something else because, you know, there are orbs appearing. There are kids going blind.
Yeah.
You know, you're in a zombified state. Your husband is missing. Like, where's that emotion?
Right. So I never saw any indication or confirmation that this was a Mexican little sea village, but all of the characters are drawn brown.
Mm-hmm. In the video it said, like, they didn't even say Mexico, they just said some Latin seaside village.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So it could be anywhere from Baja to California, right, to the coast of Mexico,
right,
to the coast of San Salvador and everything.
Yeah, so but it could I be anybody on the coast.
I want to say Pacific Ocean.
But definitely southern Southern Latino country. But they never... The thing that I was kind of disappointed... Not the thing. An additional thing that I was disappointed about is that they never mentioned it. Like, I was... And we've had so many awesome experiences reading books where the culture was such a big deal.
Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm. In the books. And I feel like it was completely glossed over.
Exactly.
In here. Like, we don't see anything that indicates any kind of culture at all in this, mm-hmm. in this book.
It almost, and I'm kind of sad to say this, but it's almost a conglomeration of tropes and stereotypes.
Yeah.
You have the sexy Latina. Uh-huh. You have the other sexy, quiet, demure Latina.
The drunkard.
The drunkard. The passionate lover who hits his other lover.
The mother-like character who's like,
oh, the one as long as she
cleans. Yeah, she cleans her room. She goes to sleep. She eats very little. I'm fine.
And every time she would wander off, she would go and get her and drag her back.
We gotta clean toilet, clean the Della. Toilet. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Kind of Cinderella-esque.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, people are waking up naked in the middle of nowhere. I mean, doesn't that, you know, raise any flags? I mean, shouldn't you have some kind of reaction to this?
And
you have this like half asleep reaction. Yeah. I just don't get it.
Mm-hmm. And another thing is that, it was specifically said that those were CIA agents.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
So what the hell is if it's some American, if it's said somewhere in America, I can kind of understand that, but I'm kind of thinking like seaside village with there are some places in America that are pretty much like third world countries. mostly seeing the Appalachians.
Yeah.
But like how I was thinking was like, if it's someplace in Mexico, one, what the hell is the CIA doing there?
Yeah.
But true. I mean, like...
True.
It, not your it jurisdiction.
Also, yeah.
And you know what I didn't get? How the hell did Ella fall in love with the scientist? There was absolutely no interaction between them.
Okay, this is my bookmark. My finger was right here because that was the very next thing I was going to say.
Right?
Where she is looking up at the scientist and saying, I love you, Felix. And as I got to that panel, I'm like,
she also how? Didn't even talk.
How?
There were just glances from a distance. Mm-hmm. There was no real interaction. He didn't,
and
like...
And he just looks at her and doesn't say anything.
He doesn't say... I know. Uh-huh. The only thing I kind of felt that maybe she liked him was when she was overhearing Felix with Tito. And she had tears in her eyes.
Yeah.
That's about the whole only thing.
So,
but
yeah, we see that she's jealous or that she's sad that she hears that or whatever, but there's no indication even up to that point for her to even be jealous.
And then how the heck did Tito shove Ella to the ground and then in the next panel, Tito's helping Ella?
Her, yeah.
Like, I do not get that.
Like, what's the deal like?
Like, the only character that I actually liked besides the drunkard on the beach was the sheriff. He kept saying, get out of my town.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Or like,
very small town sheriff, like,
yeah,
you don't know anybody here, get out. And like, I kind of did like him too, except for that weird ass ending. and whatchamacallit, but I also, cell phone lady.
Oh, cell phone lady was awesome.
She was determined to take those takes and try to get it. Yeah. I just really liked her for some reason.
No, she was cool, but then she was absent for half of the story.
Yeah, and then I was really sad. Like, what the fuck? And why are you trying to get rid of cell phone lady? What did she do to you? Like, what the hell? Like, come on, fam. I want to know more about cell phone lady. Is she the only one in the town who owns a cell phone? Is that why she's called cell phone lady?
And what is this one scene on the beach with this guy in a cloak?
No, like, that's Tito's husband.
No, yeah. And I know that, but why is he wearing a cloak?
Yeah, why is he being all, like, mysterious,
yeah.
DM, like, he's trying to DM, like, a really creepy group of kids or something.
And why is he telling the orb, I know what it's like to love? Like, is he an orb alien?
It
or
makes it sound like he is an alien and got left on Earth, and they're trying to come get him back, and he's like, no, I don't want to go. Uh-huh.
But okay, I get that. But then why didn't Ella know that he was an alien?
I don't know.
And that does explain his weird situation where he was letting that other guy, you know, mess with his wife. Like,
yeah, because you get the distinct feeling that he knows what's going on from the beginning.
Uh-huh. Oh, hell and, yeah, with the smile.
Can I just tell you that I just
that, I love that. There's a cover art inside.
Those cover arts are very nice.
They are.
It's a beautiful book.
Yes.
Okay. Like, I don't think you guys, like, understand that it's really pretty. Like, a different kind of pretty, a different kind of, like, from Dave McKeon or David Mack pretty. It's a very pretty book.
Yeah. See, but there's a part here where he goes into the cave where it's her husband, and he's all, no, not now, not now, as if he knows that they're coming to get him and he doesn't want to go.
Yeah, see, I did not get that. I read that and I reread that. I'm like, I do not understand.
Yeah.
Not only that, I also get the distinction that even though he knows, what's his name? Antonio?
Mm-hmm.
He's also the lover, yeah. That they are friends or something. And I'm like, bro, you really gonna let your friend play you like that? Yeah,
right?
That's not. I don't know.
I'm gonna try, and maybe next time we record, I'm gonna just, like, not read the dialogue and just look at the images and see how that goes. Because the dialogue is confusing me.
If I was to just look at the images and draw my own conclusions about what dialogue could be happening, and that shit would be a lot better.
Yeah. Okay, so there's a point where Ella confronts the orbs, and she asks two people to stay with her, and one of them stays willingly, which is Felix, the scientist, which she loves, apparently.
Right.
And the other two, like, evaporate, but why did she want them to evaporate? I don't understand.
I don't either. What's the deal with, like, what's the deal with, like, the head honcho CIA agent? What does he know?
I know. And, I like the end because it goes back to the drunkard guy.
Yeah.
The ending.
And he goes with, that was super.
That was a really good closing, but like I said, if you just extract his story, I think you got a story on your own.
Without
all that noise in the background with the other stuff.
Yeah.
But like you said, it's a beautiful book. Mm-hmm. Hella confusing. And like I said, I reread several pages twice just to make sure I thought maybe I was distracted, I missed something, or, you know, and yeah. So I don't know, are we ready to read this?
Yeah, I think we are.
So I am giving it 2 conchas. Merely because if it was just the bad writing, I would give it 1. But the art is just really awesome. The story is not non-existent, but I gotta tell you, the story within the 3 paragraph synopsis on the back of the book is 100 times better than the actual story that I read.
Yeah.
And like, yes, and I agree with you, and I actually was going to give it 1, but like you said, the art was very spectacular, so yeah, I'm going to go with 2. And for me, I just, you're right, the synopsis was, like, so intriguing. It really was. And like I said, the little stories that you can extract from it, from some of the characters, I enjoyed.
Yeah.
But I did not a general pull towards the story at all. Uh-huh. Like, I really wanted to, though. I did too.
Uh-huh. I did too.
Like, I really wanted to. So, yeah.
I really wanted to like the story. I was going to give it 1.5, but...
We've never done halves, have we?
No, I don't think so.
But...
I'm going to give it 1 and the gum stuck under the table. Like, I'm just kidding. I don't know. Like, I don't know. I don't know.
But that, I mean, like, that artwork is really nice. Yeah. Like, it deserves a full concha in itself.
Yeah, and the covers.
Yeah. The cover art, the colors. Fine, fuck, I'll give it 2 conchas. It's a begrudging 2 conchas. Like, yeah. I don't know.
I feel you on that one. Like I said, I was going to go with 1, but then...
It's 2 conchas, but it's 1 concha that your mom lets you have now, and the other one you can't have till the end of the week.
That's exactly right. You hit the nail on the head, for sure.
Yeah. I don't know. I'll find something. Maybe we'll go back to Love and Rockets for something for
you. We're going to have to.
Yeah. And I mean, because I really... We love Jaime.
Yeah.
We very much do. And I have read some of Mario's stuff, which is really good, okay. too. Because his is a little bit harder to find, but his stuff is out there. But Gilbert, we're going to have to read Perla la Loca or something.
Okay. Oh, yeah, let's do that.
That sounds interesting. Back to Love and Rockets.
Yeah, well, we'll have an opportunity to potentially meet all three Hernandez brothers at the Latino Comics Expo coming up November 11th and 12th. They all three will be there, so I'm super excited about that, and I'm going to go straight up to Gilbert and ask him, what the fuck with Twilight Children?
Like, dude, bro.
Bro, you gotta tell me your thought process.
Yeah, I mean, even if we focused just on the children that went blind, I think we could have had
a full story.
Yeah, we could have, yeah.
Like, the idea is chock the book is full. Yeah, chock potential. Full of ideas.
There is a panel in there where at the end, another, like, mysterious guy comes looking for Ella, and he's asking everyone in the village, where's Ella? And they're like, they're all protecting her. And he goes up to the blind children, and he's like, where's Ella? He's like, we don't know Ella. We're blind.
Yeah, and we don't even know who he is, and he's one of the disintegrated ones. Yeah. I don't understand.
He's like the head of the CIA or whatever, something like that.
I guess.
Not the head of the CIA.
I don't know how you got that.
I don't know where you read that. I don't know.
I think it was from the interview.
Oh,
yeah. Because
okay.
He was the boss of the other two G-men. Oh, yeah. Man. Oh, when I say G-Man, I keep thinking something else. Like, shit.
I don't even know, dude. No.
Well, for those of you who have been listening to our podcast, this is episode 23, and up until this point, you probably have been thinking, gosh, these girls only pick books that they like. I have to tell you that we pick books based on whether or not they have Latino characters or creators, uh-huh. and a lot of times we've never read any of them, but we just end up liking them. But unfortunately, this was a stinker.
Yeah. I mean, it wasn't too bad of a stinker. We did really like the art.
Yes, the art was amazing.
The art is what made it a two-puncher.
And, I mean, it's super sad, too, that this was the last project that Dwayne Cook was working on, or had worked on, I guess, before he passed away, so.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that's two conchas, guys.
It's not like two conchas is bad. It's still two conchas.
It's still two conchas, guys. Yeah. Come on.
One concha is like, it barely whetted our appetite. No conchas is like, oh, my God.
What's the pandusa that, like, it's in the pandusa case, but it's not sweet, it's gross, and it's always the last one left in the box.
For me, it's that kind of cheesecake wannabe. Like,
the quesadilla?
No, it's the Mexican one. I don't know what it's called, but but sometimes they would get it, and it's like the last one in the bag, and you're like, forget it. It's not even worth it.
Someone else will get it. I think I know.
You know what it is? It's just like this beer. It promises chocolate, and there's like no chocolate in it.
Oh, the one that has like a sprinkling of like an idea of chocolate that kind of looks like a cuernito, like horn.
Okay. The one that has kind of like a little smear of chocolate, and that's it.
Oh, okay. No, I kind of like that one, but there's one. There's one in the case that is just like literally eating a piece of white bread. Mm. And I'm like, how is this even pan dulce? It's like, it's a misnomer. There's no dulce about it.
It's like eating the plain muffin one.
Yes! Uh-huh. My grandma used to always buy those ones because she liked it was like a corn muffin or something.
Something like that.
But, yeah, she bought them because she liked them, but I didn't like them.
My mom likes them too, and I'll only eat them with coffee, but I would never eat it by itself.
Yeah. So this book was definitely the plain muffin of pan
dulce.
I think this book was like this beer. That's what I think. This is Sarah.
A night of disappointment.
Aww.
Except for that sticky monkey we had earlier.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Totally. That was good. I think I set the bar up too high with the sticky monkey at the beginning.
also think we know the Hernandez brothers work. So I guess we were expecting something to blow our socks off like Maggie the Mechanic did. But we didn't exactly get that. Again, chock full of ideas that have a lot of potential. But potential, if it isn't put to use, ain't nothing.
True.
Can also be example of me. Oh shit. No.
Dang. She angered cat on herself. What?
Alright. So two conscious all around, if you dare, pick up Twilight Children and find out for yourself.
Mm-hmm. You might like it more. You might really like that art. That art was nice.
Okay, so it is time for On My Radar. The segment where we talk about books, TV shows, movies, something that has you excited and that you want to share with others. And this is Kristen. My On My Radar this week is something I'm super excited about, and I've been following it on Facebook. So, if you are at all familiar with Sunstone, Bloodstain, or Mercy, then yes, you know all about Linda Sahick. She is an amazing artist. Her style is just so freaking, like, I can't even describe it. It's just so good. And
she also did Postal, didn't she?
Did she?
I think she does.
Oh my gosh, I love Postal. I don't even know if she did
it. I think she did some work for it. Okay. Like the first couple volumes. Oh, okay. And then it went to a different artist.
So, great tie in there, Jen, because what I'm talking about today is a project by Linda where she is the artist working with Matt Hawkins, who is the writer of Postal. They are working on a project called Swing. Now, imagine this. It is a story of a couple who they're kind of in their, I guess, midlife crisis type, ages of their marriage. It's a married couple who hit the midlife. They have two kids. It's a 10-year marriage point. They've begun having marital problems and are trying to regain the magical spark they had at the beginning of their relationship. How do you think they did that?
They went postal?
No, the title of this book is Swing.
Oh, shoot! Oh, okay. Okay.
So, they embark on a few things and eventually experiment with voyeurism and exhibitionism, which, of course, leads them to try out swapping with another couple. It's a humorous, emotional look at a relationship where the couple loves each other deeply, wants to stay together, but needs something more. Aww. I'm so excited about this book. Oh, my God. Okay, so Matt Hawkins is amazing. If you've not read any of his books, he's written Postal, as Jen already mentioned. He's also written Think Tank. And the third one, he's also written
The Tit?
The Tithe. And he does such amazing research to put into his books. And most of the single issues, I haven't read any of the trades, I mostly read singles of his. In the back of the single issues, he writes a lot of, like, true life, like, science research that he's done to, like, back up a lot of the things that he writes in the book.
I love when that happens.
Yeah, and so it's super, super cool. He's an awesome writer. He's a very, very amazingly nice guy. If you ever have a chance to talk to him, he's always at the Top Cow booth at conventions. He's just so nice. The cool thing, or I would have to say cooler thing about this book, Linda is posting panels up on her Facebook and DeviantArt pages. I think right now she's up to like panel four, and so you can kind of follow along the beginnings of the first issue. This is not going to be in stores until April 2018. So if you guys have a kind of a little bit of ways to wait, but it's on my radar right now because Linda is sharing this, and Matt is sharing these things on their Facebook pages and probably other social media outlets. I just happen to be seeing them on Facebook. But, again, another cool thing about this, the characters in Swing are connected to both Sunstone, or to Sunstone, Bloodstain, and Mercy.
They're within, wow. Oh, the realm?
They're within the Sahik verse, as it was coined online that I read. And you, and Jen will totally appreciate the way that they are connected. They all know each other from an online game that they play.
Yes, nice.
They do not know each other IRL, but they are all friends on some.
They play the same RPG game, because I do read Sunstone, and I followed Stefan Sahik, who is Linda Sahik's husband, for a long time. And he's done a lot of funny works.
Yeah,
he's an amazing, talented artist. He is. Him and his wife are both so good. Mm-hmm. They are amazing, and they both work for Top Cow.
Yeah,
and Sahik himself is doing some variant covers for DC Comics right now, and their metal tie-ins, and they're all always so amazing. But Sunstone itself is about a BDSM relationship between two women. And this is like their first like real relationship, and so they're trying to figure it out, and how BDSM can be sexy and funny at times, because they're trying things out, and it's cute, and it gets serious and talks about emotions and everything, and it is I love it. It's really, really good. It's very NSFW though.
So don't read it at work.
don't read it at work.
So this is on my radar, and it keeps coming up on my Facebook. I'm so excited. I love what I've read so far. It's nothing too crazy at all. We're just kind of learning about the characters and their backgrounds and stuff like that. But April 2018 cannot come soon enough. If it is something that you're interested in, Top Cow will be publishing it. Let your comic book, your LCS, your local comic shops know, so that they could put the orders in, and definitely support these two, three awesome creators. And actually, another, I think, writer that's working with Matt is Jenny Chung. Mm-hmm. So, I am so excited, and I really hope that, I have no doubt that this is definitely going to be a book that is amazing.
Excellent. It sounds really exciting. Yeah, it sounds especially really fun. The swinger part. So cool.
So, moving on to our next segment is Juntos y Fuertes. This is a bit chisme-ish too, but Image Comics is publishing a work called Where We Live. That is, it's a bit love is love situation, where they're gathering a strong team of creators, writers, and artists, and like letters and everything, to basically make an anthology series that will benefit the people who suffered from the Las Vegas shooting that just happened recently, and all the proceeds of this book will go to a GoFundMe account for the survivors and the victims and the family of the victims of the Las Vegas shooting. And it is being spearheaded by J.H. Williams III, Wendy Wright Williams, Scott Alley, Dave Stewart, and Eric Stephenson. And it's we've read work by J.H. Williams, Batwoman, so we know like he's very talented, and he released a statement that said, on October 1st, 2017, Las Vegas, Nevada suffered the worst mass shooting in modern American history, resulting in 58 deaths and over 500 injured. It broke my heart. Las Vegas is my home. I felt like something needed to be done to help in a unique way. A week passed before the shock cleared enough to decide I wanted to help create a benefit book project for the survivors, along with oversight from Eric Stephenson, Scott Ali, Dave Stewart, and Wendy Wright Williams. I'm thankful for them and Image Comics offering so quickly to do this. With this book titled Where We Live, our hope is to not only help those in need after this tragic event, but also somehow start a real conversation on avenues for preventing this sort of violence from happening again in the future. So it's going to include a variety of artworks that is meant to start an ongoing conversation about compassion in society, mental health stigmatization, gun violence, and the importance of fostering conversations about the above issues.
Wow.
So it's, as I said, it's kind of like how IDW responded right. with Love is Love yeah. after the Pulse massacre, and that all the benefits would go to the victims and the families of those injured
yeah.
Because of the Pulse shooting. This is that situation where it is again. Now, I'm in full support of this, but there's a bit of drama tied to it. Scott Ali, who worked for Dark Horse for a very, very long time, and who resigned just relatively recently, because he has been accused of sexual harassment and general misconduct with fans in the, And it's,
big news. Yeah,
that Yeah, I fully support this, and there's some strong names attached to this. Like, J.H. Williams III, like, he's really good.
Yeah.
And you can tell, like, that he's doing this out of compassion, and that all these proceeds will not, whatchamacallit, they won't be going to, like, benefit. They're going, like, they're for profit. They're not being pocketed by these people. They're going to go directly to a GoFundMe account. But, golly.
Yeah.
And it's a bit of, he did resign, and he's kind of doing just like freelance work, and no one will really hire him full-time.
What was he doing?
Sexual harassment.
No. Is he an artist or?
Yeah, he's a writer.
Writer, okay.
Yeah, he was a writer and an editor at Dark Horse.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And so, but like Image hired him, and it's just like, I'm not saying like, I'm not saying that the book isn't worth the time. It definitely is.
Yeah.
There's a reason that said that all the people who have died and the funeral rites and the hospital bills and everything would exceed $600 million
wow.
combined.
That's so insane.
These families need that help.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
And I definitely think comics is a way to help them in this manner. But, like, come on, Image, do better.
Yeah.
Like, it's, especially right now with a lot of what's going on in Hollywood, in the California Assembly Room itself.
Yeah.
How a lot of women have called out other men about, sexual misconduct. Mm-hmm. It's gaining fire.
Right.
But in comics, it doesn't really seem to be affecting everything. I think Gail Simone also tweeted something about this and how the comics industry is still rampant in sexual misconduct, sexual harassment, and now it's not really affecting any of these writers either.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully we kind of see a change with that, but it doesn't really seem to be
doing
much if, you know, Scott Ali has been hired by Image to help with this.
And, wow.
Like, it's for a good cause. I just wish that they hadn't tied someone to it like that, but when it comes out, I'll buy it.
Does it say when the
It does not say when it will be out.
Okay.
That's going to be forthcoming, but I believe that it's something that's easily kept track of. I mean, when they announced Love is Love, we didn't know when it was going to come out either, but it was shortly announced when they were going to end.
So, I would just say that if you're interested in having a copy and supporting this project, to let your LCSs know immediately that you are interested so that it can be on their radar and that they can order multiple copies once it comes on solicitation.
Exactly.
Definitely. So I definitely think it's worth something to be mentioned because, so like, even though like it's not kind of on our minds anymore, even with like Punisher coming out and how we're saying that we're excited and everything, it's still something that is still affecting people and how some stories are coming out. Many people were quadriplegic after that, and like they're like it's all very sad, and it was like. It's a very sad situation, and these people need all the support they can get, and so that's why I kind of wanted to put Juntos y Fuertes, because it's something that affected, I think, all of them.
Is this Kickstarter live already?
It's Image, they're gonna do it, no matter what.
No, so you said that the proceeds from this book were going to a Kickstarter? A GoFundMe,
Yes, the GoFundMe is live.
Okay, so maybe we can share that GoFundMe on our Facebook and our Twitter. That way, if you feel like you want to do something and you're just like, itching to do it now, and instead of waiting for the book, we can put up the link for this GoFundMe so that you can donate now if you'd like.
Yeah, I actually have a friend. She's more like a family now, but I'm friends with her entire family, and she had said that one of her best friends from high school had moved to Las Vegas and married this wonderful man, and this wonderful man was a police officer, you know, a little league coach and everything, and he was one of the ones that was helping out victims, and he ended up dying.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so it's that close. Like, it's insane. Yeah. Insane how, like, you know, I'm in Compton, California, and I know someone who was very close to someone who actually died in that massacre.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and it's true. I mean, one of an old friend from high school is living in Las Vegas, and when that happened, she sent out a message saying, like, oh, I wasn't at the concert. Yeah. I'm basically at home. Because she works at the Strip.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so she wasn't there. Yeah. She wasn't on the job. So it's, we all know somebody or know somebody. Yeah. Because it's Las Vegas. There's so many people there. Mm-hmm. And it was very much a tragedy. 58 people dead, 500 injured.
Yeah, that's just, I can't even imagine, I can't wrap my head around how many people that really is.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
It was for a country music
festival
or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Country music. I
thought the same thing, because a week before that, my cousin had gone for some kind of other music / art festival, and she said she was around that area as well. Mm-hmm. So I mean, wow, like she just drove up there for that in the same area where the shooting happened. So it was like, man, it was just like too close. It's crazy what people are suffering right now because of that, and continue to suffer because a lot of lives were changed and derailed, and shit just really hit the roof or hit the fan.
Yeah.
So like, I can never get these things right. Hit the nail on the donkey. I don't know.
Well, thank you for actually bringing up. Yes, I hadn't heard of that, and it's definitely a project worth supporting, and I will make sure that Heidi Ho orders their own fair share of copies to have at the shop.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah.
All right, guys. Well, come to the end of the episode. Any shout-outs or any kind of dirty limericks out there to the world?
Well, I'd actually like to give a shout-out to Fanbase Press. Fanbase Press is a small publication company that I'm sure you've heard us mention before as being the publishers of Quince, the story about Lupe, who gains her superpowers on the day of her quinceañera. I just want to give a shout out to Barbara and all the other people there at Fanbase Press for including Comadres y Comics in their panel that we did this last weekend at the Stan Lee's Los Angeles Comic Con. We were part of the panel called The Impact of Latinx Creators and Readers in the Comic Book Industry, and the panel was a huge success. We met tons of awesome people, people who had never heard of Comadres y Comics, and who were hungry for more knowledge of Latino, Latinx characters and creators. And so I think we made a lot of new friends and fans that day, and it was all thanks to Fanbase Press, who facilitated the fact that we were able to be a part of that panel.
That's so awesome. Well, on that note with Fanbase Press, so we are co-hosting along with Heidi Ho Comics an event I'm living in. But yes, this Saturday, and everybody's welcome. It's a family-friendly environment. There's going to be a signing and release of the book of Quince. We're having candy table, food, music, dress in your best Quince outfit, then come on over. Heidi Ho Comics.
That's November 4th, depending on when you're listening to this. So yeah. Don't come out if it's November 12th, because that Saturday.
That is actually.
November 11th. That Saturday, we will be at the Latin Comics Expo at the Museum of Latin Art in Long Beach.
Yeah. Exactly. So remember, November 11th and 12th will be there, and we'll be having a little surprise.
We have swag, and I'm so super excited about it. Our swag is so amazing, so much so that I almost don't want to give you any. I want to keep it all for myself.
Yeah, they're really cute. So if you want to see it, if you want to see our swag, you're going to have to come down. So
you might get a sneak peek on some of our social media, so don't forget to follow us on Instagram at Comadres y Comics.
Or on Twitter at Comic Comadres.
And on Facebook on Comic Comadres. And also we have a email, which we do read. It's comadresycomics@gmail.com. So,
we also have Snapchat.
Snaps, we do! No, we have Snapchat. Yes, guys. And that you can find on our social media to follow us on Snapchat. I think that's our episode.
Yep, that's it.
That's it.
Thanks for listening.
Yeah, although there was a lot of disappointment, there was a lot of good stuff too. So guys, thank you for listening. Thanks to the listeners. And we can't wait to meet you at our events. So come on down and say hello.
Absolutely.
We have been your hosts. I am Sarah.
I'm Kristen.
And I'm Jen.
Bye guys.
Bye.
Bye.